And our community connection on AM 1400 brought to you this morning by Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman. We've talked for about more than a year. Good morning, Mr. Coleman. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Good to be here, Charlie. Thank you.
And when we started this conversation, it was, we're pretty sure that Jim Bridenstine's going to get the NASA job, and we're still pretty sure he's going to get it. But now, if there is a replacement named, it would be coinciding with the primary. So
that's right. Even if he gets confirmed today, June 26th is going to be our Republican ballot. So we do know the timeline. That clarity is welcome on our side. For so long last year, we just didn't know if we were going to have to jump quick or not. So this is good.
I know locally, I believe the date is April 19th, there will be a local forum for candidates for the 1st Congressional District. And
that's right.
I get to be among
a moderator,
the moderator,
right?
On that one. People talk to me, why would you want to? I said, that's the fun part of politics for me. I get to be the voice of inquiring minds want to know, so to speak, and hopefully allow you, the candidates, to get your positions out in front of as many voters as possible.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you're going to be moderating. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a fun event. And for everybody here in the area, man, it's going to be a great opportunity to just come out, look at things with their own eyes, hear things with their own ears, and make a really informed decision on June 26th.
That's right. Since you and I have been talking, we've had a pretty good-sized tax cut as far as income taxes are concerned. And since roughly the 1st of February, people have probably noticed a change in their paycheck as far as less withholding. Just on the fiscal side of things, the economy in general is on the way to being healthier.
It is, and I'm grateful for that. I'm particularly grateful for that tax measure that passed in December. I was very concerned at the time, if it didn't pass, that we would be really looking at a very serious situation with this, with the midterms, and that people were going to be so frustrated because we had a Republican White House now, we had a Republican House of Representatives, a Republican Senate, and we really dropped the ball on many issues. So I was very excited that tax did pass, and I am grateful for the economic indicators that are in a positive direction. That said, I am a long-term thinker, and I'm still looking at our spending and our debts, and that is something that still needs to be reined in and treated seriously as an urgent matter, which it is.
Looking at your background and training, again, we try to cover this nearly every time, just a little bit about who you are and how you came to be sitting here this morning. Your training originally was for an Air Force officer?
That's right. I came out of the Air Force Academy and became an Air Force officer, served as a military intelligence officer on active duty in the Middle East. Later served as a reservist, got mobilized during the surge of 2007-2008, and was told, hey, this time you're not deploying with the Air Force, you're going with the Army, so pack your bags, you're going to Fort Bragg. And I did, trained up with them, and went into West Baghdad at a place called Camp Slayer as a senior intelligence officer for an Army brigade. Served in conservative legal trenches with groups like the Christian Legal Society, the Alliance Defending Freedom, the Federalist Society, was in private practice for a short season, but laid that down to go and help a very serious situation with persecuted Christians. These are people that I encountered when I was deployed to Baghdad and throughout Iraq. These people were already, you know, displaced. They were struggling tremendously, and my heart exploded for them. When you start to play with their kids, hear their own stories from their own mouths, something in me snapped. And so for 6 years or so, I led all of the Middle East field efforts for Voice of the Martyrs right here in Bartlesville, a fantastic organization that's perhaps a global leader, the global leader in helping in these situations in the world's worst countries. So you name the country, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, I was over there helping lead a team, overseeing tremendous work going on. And it's something that I think Bartlesville can really be proud of is this ministry that's a global leader.
You have mentioned some items that Senator Inhofe echoes and have been an interest area for him, and I think you would pick up a lot of the same items. As far as military readiness, the Air Force, the Navy, probably other services as well, the readiness numbers are not where they should be. Air Force has cannibalized aircraft A in order to fix aircraft B,
yep.
and Navy doesn't have the spares, certainly doesn't have the vessels. We're flying older aircraft than we are used to flying, and fewer units, fewer people.
That's right. We have been stretched and strained as a military. That's one of the reasons that I deeply believe we need more veterans in these seats, is to be champions for our veterans, but to also be champions of our current military families. Our current military status, they're going through a lot. They've had to do a lot with very little. So yes, we need to make sure that we're in a better, more robust state. And you know, honestly, with serving comes sobriety, just understanding the stakes that are at play and the families that struggle to see deployment after deployment after deployment. And just the pressures that they encounter, and just to be able to speak up wisely on their behalf to make sure that we are in a position to be as strong as we need to be for our national defense, but also that we're taking care of those that are shouldering this burden.
Since 1990 or 91, but particularly since 2001, the pace of operations has really only picked up.
That's right. It has, and they're struggling. In fact, that's one of the reasons people ask, how did you, as an Air Force intelligence officer, go with an Army unit into a combat zone? Yep. And the reason is, I'm very glad that I could, but it was to prevent an Army intelligence officer from perhaps going on a fifth or sixth deployment by that point. And that was back in 2007. So I was very grateful that the Air Force generals, the admirals, and the Navy got together with the Army general staff, because the Army general staff was saying, listen, we're outstripping our capacity. We're really laying way too heavy a burden on our folks. And the Air Force and the Navy identified some positions that could translate to the Army roles. Mm-hmm. Intelligence was one of them. And so by me going, that spared some individual from having to repeat a deployment like that. And so we have to find solutions to make sure that we're not burning our guys out.
Well, a good portion of my career was in a unit with a close air support mission. And
yeah.
So it's that coordination between the Air Force enlisted or commissioned on the ground working side by side with the Army that says, hey, I just laid some white smoke over here, put the ordnance there.
Yep, we have. Yeah, that's right. So it's one big team, and it's been an honor to serve on that team. But when you're looking at Washington, D.C., when you're looking at the U.S. House of Representatives, there's not a lot of folks sitting in those seats that have that background or understanding, and I think we need more to make sure that we're championing these families, our veterans, and also making wise national security decisions that do not waste resources, that advance American interests, and that just make coherent sense.
Part of the House, and I'll say the legislature in general, is to either fund or not fund specific programs, and looking either at DOD or foreign affairs as far as foreign policy, you're dual qualified for that.
That's right. I think we have to be good stewards of the resources that we bring to bear, whether that's dollars that we have or the military families that I'm describing. But that's right. We have to make sure that we're making thoughtful investments, and where it needs to be pared back, we need to pare it back, because we really are broke as a nation. We are overextended. That doesn't mean that we can forego our national security or these important responsibilities that the federal government has. But we have to be very wise and know that what we're doing is for a proper end, because I'll be honest, there's countries out there, there's powers out there on the international stage that are happy to see the United States overextended. We're vulnerable on a fiscal footing, and they're delighted to see us in this position. We have to restore fiscal sanity to our country. Because it's not just a dollars and cents issue, it's a moral issue, it's a national security issue.
On the dollars and cents side of things, though, you've talked federalism frequently, and I'm not trying to put words in any candidate's mouth, but I have to feel that you would say many of our fiscal reasons that we are overextended are due to projects that are not essential government programs.
That's right. I love the Constitution. I think it's a brilliant document drafted by brilliant individuals who did their homework over the course of civilization and over the course of the human heart. It's brilliant, but in so many ways, when you look at government today in Washington, it has grown to such a size and scale that our founders, if they were to look at it, would not recognize it. Our country is going to be better if the federal government stays within its lane, allows state and local governments to drive in their lanes to make policy decisions, and that we really limit the federal government to the powers of the federal level, which are few and defined. They should encompass everything, and especially when we're looking at our spending, we're spending money like it's going out of style. It's got to stop, and we really need to pare it back to the essentials of that federal role.
We're talking about that particular role of the House, even then, that money bills originate in the House, and mm-hmm. it is primarily the House, but the Congress collectively with the power of the purse.
That's right. It all works if we just follow the design, the pattern outlined in the Constitution. It all goes off the rails if we continue to grow and grow and grow.
We'll get more specific with Andy Coleman when we continue a Community Connection coming up in just a moment. 1400 K1.
If you're suffering from a bad back, bad knees, need a hip replacement, call the Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center, 918-494-9300. With a large number of only the best qualified specialists on staff, EOC is able to provide better care than anyone else in Eastern Oklahoma. I should know. I had my back surgery in 2012 with a degenerative disc between L4 and L5. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center took me through a step-by-step process, in which now, after surgery, I am leading a normal life. Get back to your normal life. Whether you're in need of back surgery, hip replacement, knee surgery, or knee replacement, trust your happiness to Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. Ask your doctor about EOC or call for a consultation. 918-494-9300. Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. We're located in the Natalie Building at 6475 South Yale in Tulsa.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM, and again, we're talking with the candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman. Andy, the president is talking about fairer trade for the U.S. There is a difference, particularly as the president defines it, fair trade versus free trade.
Yeah.
There is talk of a series of tariffs, and not necessarily with our so-called enemies, but frequently with our very good friends.
That's right. I appreciate that President Trump is looking to negotiate better terms on trade packages. However, I am concerned about the potential for unintended consequences. Anybody that's listened to me talk for any period of time knows that I'm a long-term thinker, and I believe it's from my intelligence background, but I really zero in on unintended consequences or those second and third order effects that come out of our decisions. I am concerned with the potential for retaliation, that this could lead to problems with our economy, increased costs for our families. So that's something that I'm paying attention to. And I think we have to be very, very shrewd in how we conduct ourselves.
It's very easy for anyone to keep going back and forth, on the other hand, sort of things. You can say we have historically lost jobs in the mining and manufacturing industry, the iron and steel, the aluminum that used to be produced here in the U.S. is being produced cheaper elsewhere, mm-hmm. and that is a domino effect through a lot of other things economically for the country.
That's right. You have to look at the comparative advantages of these different areas and what makes economic sense. And I understand one of the arguments is that some of these, like when you're looking at steel and aluminum, there's a national security component to it, and you do not want it totally surrendered to outside powers. You want to have an in-house ability to do that as well. I'm all for negotiating better terms. I just grow concerned on the tariff front with the potential problems that could stem out of these decisions and spiral into other industries. I look at the 1930s as a student of history, and sometimes protectionist measures, when they're in place, they have these insidious effects, mm-hmm. And more protections are put in place by other countries. And there's also national security issues that arise from that as well. When you look at the Second World War and some of the protectionist practices that preceded it, there's a saying out there that if things get so bad and that goods stop crossing borders, well, then troops will. I just want to look and make sure that we're looking at the big picture and realizing that these decisions often have cascading effects beyond the narrow lanes we try to keep them in.
Well, and certainly past Congresses have found themselves in the land of unintended consequences.
Yep, that's right. And that's one of the things that I get so frustrated about as a long-term thinker. Other countries, other powers are thinking in terms of generations, too often our leaders, particularly in Washington, are thinking in 18 or 24-month cycles. They're thinking in these short-term election cycles. Their eyes are on their shoes, not on the horizon. That short-term thinking is a disservice to us. It does not help us. We need to have a long game in mind, and we need more leaders intentionally focused on that.
Something you and I have talked about frequently in the past, a series of continuing resolutions to fund the government as opposed to passing a budget in regular order. The House has done somewhat of a better job than the Senate, but neither body is blameless.
That's right. We have to rein this in. We have to rein this in. The U.S. Congress really has one power, and that is the power of the purse. And we need to make sure that we are following through on that responsibility and carrying it out, that responsibility, faithfully. We need to return to a healthy budget cycle.
Cooperation with the states is important. We've talked to federalism frequently. You've gone back to the founding documents to talk about the specified powers of the federal government and, of course, the 10th Amendment. Let's talk Second Amendment just a little bit.
Yeah.
Current events, school shootings. I think there is a concerted effort to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of can be, as the phrase goes, a slippery slope. You want to limit firearms from the people who would do harm and yet not infringe exactly the wording of the Second Amendment.
That's right. The Second Amendment was put in the Constitution on purpose, intentionally, again by our founders. And it wasn't just to protect our hunting rights. It was a recognition that throughout history, populations have been disarmed. I saw it firsthand working in northern Iraq. Assyrian villages were told, oh, you don't need your arms. We'll protect you. Everything will be just fine. And then when ISIS rolled in, the first vehicles out were the government vehicles that were supposed to protect them. And so these villages were just rolled. Our founders did their homework. They put it in there for a reason. And I don't want to see those rights overturned. Like you said, perhaps with the best of intentions, maybe some have ulterior motives, but some just want to prevent these from getting in the wrong hands. But what I'll point out is right now what the issue is to me, again, from a security standpoint and somebody that's worked abroad, is we need to secure our schools. And these school shootings are awful, and my heart goes out to everyone that's been affected by it. But I point out, you know, in 2004, Beslan, Russia, over 770 students were held hostage by militants. And it wasn't a mental health issue. It wasn't because they were over 21 years of age. These were people that had a political or religious ideology and wanted to inflict harm. And they went into a school with precision, with tactics, and over 200 students lost their lives. We have to be able to harden the soft target that is our schools.
A bill making its way through the Congress, it seems to be doing well, taking action on, I'll say, the mental health issue and not necessarily anything specifically firearms related, as I understand the bill right now. But certainly that could be a proper role of government.
Well, yeah, and I would say that all of this is a part of it. The mental health aspect, that's a part of the solution. I don't see it as the end-all, be-all. Like I said, yeah, with this, unfortunately, this lunatic Cruz, this 19-year-old who shot up the school in Florida, you could point to the mental health aspects of that case. But what I just described in Beslan, Russia, there was a similar school attack in Peshawar, Pakistan. Sometimes these people that would harm us are not suffering from a mental condition. They just subscribe to a political or a religious view that's contrary to our own. And we have to be able to safeguard against those measures as well.
Yeah, you are busy on the campaign trail talking with voters. I know you have public forums here and there. We mentioned the one next month on the 19th. Do you find good questions coming from voters at this point in time?
I find outstanding questions, and I genuinely enjoy it. And in fact, if anybody, your listeners, if they want to pull together some friends, we've done small groups throughout the district, and the questions that I field are fascinating. As somebody that cares deeply about our country and about policy, I really enjoy getting into it with them and helping them to make an informed choice. If your listeners would like to get in touch with us and set up their own events, their own small group, they can do that by going to our website at andycoleman.org. And Coleman is spelled just like the camping gear, C-O-L-E-M-A-N. They can also follow us on Facebook, on our campaign page, which is at Andy Coleman 4OK, and that's the number 4. But if they message us through that, we will get back in touch with them. We'll answer any questions they have, but we'd be happy to set up events. The questions are fascinating. I want them to keep coming.
You have had others who have associated themselves with you in your campaign, most notably Mr. Ed Meese. Mm-hmm. You've had events at Oklahoma Wesleyan and some support there. You seem to have some people of note that are saying, take notice of Andy Coleman.
That's right, and I'm grateful. What's happened is they have kicked the tires, just like your listeners are doing right now, by, you know, hearing me out, and they're going to do their own research. But a number of individuals have kicked the tires and come out to publicly endorse us. That includes Dr. Everett Piper, Attorney General Ed Meese, who you mentioned, former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum, who, of course, took Oklahoma in 2012 when he ran for president. I was profoundly grateful to have his support, Lance. We've had a number of others, including the Combat Veterans for Congress. And we do hope to have Senator Santorum in town, which will be make for another fun event, another opportunity for people to come and examine exactly who I am and what I stand for and what I'm trying to do. That's still in the works, and as we get specifics, we will certainly share them.
One, just a little bit getting to know the candidate point, we were chatting before we went on the air, and you have a partner at home that's helping keep you focused on all the issues, too.
Well, I am richly blessed by my wife, Liz. We've been married 15 years. She's a teaching assistant in the Owosso Public Schools. She's every adventure I've been a part of, whether it's being dropped off in war zones as a military officer or working in the Middle East on behalf of Voice of the Martyrs, she's been a part of it. We married right out of the Air Force Academy. When I graduated from the Air Force Academy, she's traveled in Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan with me, really for her blessing women and young girls in these countries where there are a lot of hurting women and young girls. But she's just been a rock star in my life. She's just been a faithful companion, and I love her to death. And people are really blessed, I think, when they get to meet her. She's able to attend a number of these events, and when she does, people seem to forget about me. They don't want to talk to me anymore. They really enjoy hanging out with Liz.
Well, it's the conversation at home that influences the conversation at work.
That's right.
Candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman. And, again, your website, if people would like to either question or support you.
That's right, andycoleman.org. Coleman is spelled just like the camping gear, C-O-L-E-M-A-N. The Facebook page is at andycoleman4OK. And we would be profoundly grateful for anybody that would make a contribution online safely and securely. It can be done at that website. They can also fire questions our way. We'll get them answered.
And he will be one of the folks at that April 19th forum. More details on it coming as we get a little bit closer. Andy, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Charlie.
And, of course, talking, getting ready for the June primary on a Community Connection on AM 1400 K1. Community Connection this morning brought to you by Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center. News on the way next from the Oklahoma News Network.
ONN News, I'm Sean Carey. A state Senate plan.